This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, and it's the Health and Living Show on The Bigger Picture. I'm Meera Sivasothi. It's the fifth and final episode of the year-end roundup of 2015. We're concluding with the financial impact towards access to healthcare in this time of economic uncertainties.
What are the areas that is pushing up the healthcare costs? The more I write down on my list, the more complex I realize this whole ecosystem is, because they're all interlinked. It's not just GST.
Our Prime Minister, when he announced GST, he said health will be tax exempt. And we thought we could hold him to his word. But now we find out that if you go to a private hospital and see a private specialist, you are actually going to pay GST.
It's linked with pharmaceutical companies, drugs.
Of course, normal annual increase of drugs is there. There is always like 5 to 10% increase annually.
Technology, research, teachings.
Pharmaceutical companies come in later in the game. They don't do the very basic research to try and figure out what are the different pathways to treat Alzheimer's or to treat cancer or to treat other things. They only come in once that research has been done and there's an indication of a pathway forward. It's quite clear that without direct public funding of research, we would not get these products.
When the budget was announced, we got about 4% of our GDP for healthcare. And during that time, I complained that it was insufficient, because if you compare to the West, they are talking like 7 to 10%, in some countries even much higher. We know we cannot afford to spend that much, but at least we need to slowly increase the amount. And now, due to the economic situation, we have slashed it even further. Therefore, we are spending something like 2.5% of GDP. So what happens is new things cannot be started. And now with the new circular about Public Services Department, where they have frozen all new intakes of staff, we cannot expand our services as well. So whatever services that are there will now be further burdened, and the waiting times will get longer. We cannot do anything about that because of the limitation. Most government hospitals declare 100 beds, but actually have 150 beds, because we don't say no to anybody. We will find a space for you. Whether it's a floor space, an extension bed, a camp cot, we will find a space for you, because we don't turn down anybody in the public sector. So in that sense, the public sector has been providing virtually free healthcare to everyone and not saying no. Only thing is, we cannot. We apologize for the conditions that you may have. You will stay in overcrowded wards because the workload is just too much.
Over the past few years, a lot of doctors have been produced. So we are very bottom-heavy. The very junior medical officers, the housemen, there are a lot. The specialists, far fewer, because a lot of them leave to private practice. So if there's anyone being overworked, it's more likely to be the specialists. Okay, but I think they know how to handle it. When you talk about the junior doctors, the medical officers, yes, it's possible, because when they're housemen, they do shifts. When they become MOs, they're supposed to do 24-hour calls. They're not quite used to it. So during that time when they're adapting, they may get overtired. Housemen do shifts, and I find that my daughter's a houseman, so I speak from experience here. The trouble is that hours can be very long at a stretch. There's not a lot of stressful work to be done, perhaps, but they also are not relaxing. You know, they clerk cases, they take blood, send blood, collect results. A lot of work, stressful enough. And the hours can be very long.
It means that the specialists have to work doubly hard. The senior medical officers have to work doubly hard to train them, and they don't have the time nor the energy. So you have so many housemen to be trained. You obviously will train those who come forward and say, look, I want to be trained. And you won't have much patience or energy to try to persuade those who are in the background all the time. You don't want to sugarcoat the pill. Right? So you got to tell them, all right, now you're a houseman, you're a doctor, your job is to take care of the patient. And your job is to make sure that you don't make mistakes. Your job is to make sure that you're always updated on current issues. So you see, the fatigue is one issue. The other issue is the challenge to keep themselves updated, to make sure they don't make mistakes. When they diagnose a patient or they plan the management, every 150 specialists resign annually, every year, 150 from the Ministry of Health. Some of them are not very comfortable to go to the private sector. You know, the young ones who are still there, who are very energetic, dynamic and all that, they don't want to leave. They want to stay on. But it's not just overwork, it's more than that. You know, I mean, it's the academic milieu, the kind of services they would like. I mean, you are a specialist, say you are a gastroenterologist, you would like certain equipment to be there. If it's not there, then they feel that, you know, they cannot perform as well as they could. And also research is very important in universities, and these people must have time to do research. If they don't have time to do research, they get marked down. So there are a lot of other factors as well. You know, it's not just overwork.
The doctors are also facing a lot of challenges. Obviously, litigation's going up.
This is medical law, and if doctors practicing without knowing the law is putting a risk to themselves and the patient. Now, the doctors are put in a position to say, if I choose to give you treatment, the other one is going to be denied. But that decision is a clinical judgment. If he is going to challenge the patients, first of all, patients cannot demand treatment. They can't. If everyone goes and demand treatment and say, my cancer will spread if you put on me on a waiting list, there will be many other patients coming forward. So the courts will never take that position. Clinical judgments are not the purview of the courts. The doctors will have to decide, look, I have this many patients, I have this limited resources. How do I allocate?
One of the priority system is that we put everyone on first-come, first-served basis. However, when there's an urgent condition comes in, something in this situation, the people who have been on the waiting list actually has to be moved away. So you might have two or three cancellations as a result of that. So if your condition is elective, you might be waiting a long, long time and keep being put back.
But if they go to court to actually challenge the decision, to say, you shortchanged me, you allowed me to wait 6 months because you gave someone else. If the doctor can justify, I had to give someone else because the clinical judgment is that he needed it more than you, he's not wrong. And the hospital will be able to defend that position. So we know we have a limited amount of money, but the numbers of patients who are needing this money is increasing.
We have been using general taxes all this while. But when you collect general taxes, you cannot assure a certain percentage will end up in the health sector. It will be dependent on the budget for that year, what percentage the health sector will get. And therefore, in this country, we have been averaging about 2.5-2.6% of GDP for our health sector. That's quite low. But even though we spend very little for our public health care, we have been rated third in the world. In the sense that we provide the most equitable health care to our population.
If we already know that we haven't spent that much for decades and decades and everything is all behind, and what are we doing about it? We just accept that we continue to spend 2.5% of GDP on healthcare, and how do we change that?
What we want to do is we make sure that people who need it the most, people who are most vulnerable, are given access to treatment. Therefore, when the government is revising and thinking about providing insurance, they need to take equity into the, you know, and make sure that people who are most vulnerable, those who are in the lower socioeconomic group, those with low education, they are the people who need more coverage. Access to healthcare is definitely a human right that also includes access to cancer treatment. Of course, there's a lot is being done at the moment to make sure that patients from any layer of the society have access. And while it may be true that some patients may not be able to get access to all the optimal treatment that a patient in the United States, for instance, steps are being taken. Nevertheless, I think this is where financial risk protection comes in. You know, like need for publicly funded healthcare, which is what we are actually doing at the moment in our country, which is not sustainable. So we need to talk about health insurance.
They will charge you 6% on their premium, but the premium itself will go up. So the total cost of insurance premiums will definitely be higher than 6%.
And the insurance industry has done very well, and they've sold quite a lot of insurance cards to a lot of Malaysian public. And that is why more Malaysians can afford to go to the private healthcare. But with the implementation of GST affecting the cost of healthcare, we might find that some of these numbers reducing and more of the patients actually going to public sector, even further burdening the overcrowded public hospital.
With the GST in place, you're anticipated more burden that you're going to face. One of the things that concerned me, obviously, I worked in public hospitals before. Of course, we are value for money for so many years. We're ranked number 3 in the world and so on and so forth. But we have an aging nation.
If you ask a person who's above 60 now, what you earned and saved for your old age, was it enough? And the answer is most probably no. If their children don't take care of them, they will be homeless. But luckily, our society still has that family values where we take care of our parents. Mm. And therefore, we are not so badly off. But the thing is, we need to look. If you look at the age of retirement, it is slowly creeping up. And the reason is very simple, because we are living longer. Do you have enough savings to survive for 18 years? That's the question we need to ask ourselves. And the cost of healthcare will continue to go up. It won't come down. No cost seems to be going down, except the value of the dollar that you have in your pocket. That's the only thing that's shrinking. So purchasing capacity is dropping. So we need to anticipate. So we can depend on the government to a certain amount to provide a certain amount of healthcare. But individuals need to look out for their own.
Well, if you look at the models in many, many countries, you know, even somewhere like Singapore or US, insurance is useful up to a point. However, whenever the, for example, chemotherapies and very, very advanced oncology drugs, and then sometimes the insurance itself will not cover. So we are living in a very fast-paced society where there's a lot of advancements in technology and also in drugs, but we're not keeping up pace with the savings that actually is spent on healthcare. And that is part of the problem, because the discrepancy that we have in terms of the expenditure is way, way outstripped what is allocated for healthcare. I would like to read out the list that I feel that are the things that affected a lot of our patients. Obviously, insurance and hospital costs, technology, drugs, aging nations, cancer rising, and also sedentary lifestyle that actually put us, our health in jeopardy.
It was noted that in Malaysia, we had about 45% of patients suffering from financial catastrophe as a result of cancer. The hidden cause of cancer, we can look at the individual or at the family level. So when we look at the individual, it can be that not necessarily it's due to the medical cause, which is actually the direct cause, but indirect cause can be due to the inability to return to work, meaning that, you know, they are unable to actually earn money, and also in terms of quality of life. So a patient affected by cancer, their quality of life can deteriorate greatly depending on the stage of the disease. So that is at the individual level. And at the bigger level, inability to return to work, if the person is a sole breadwinner of the family, it impacts the family financially, but it also impacts the employers, you know, loss of productivity. Sometimes they also need to pay compensations and so on. So the impact of cancer is not restricted to medical cause, but it's financial and it's beyond the individual. So it's the society receives the impact of cancer. But we need to improve our health insurance in Malaysia. For instance, a person who has got breast cancer, when they have mastectomy, meaning that the removal of the breast, and they need a prosthesis for the breast, or they need a reconstruction, insurance does not cover that. In Malaysia, the insurance companies deem that as cosmetic. In reality, that's not cosmetic. So those are the areas that we need to move forward and work on with the insurance agencies to be fair, because I honestly think that it's not fair, because those things which are part of treatment should be deemed as treatment and not as cosmetic.
Many people, many, many more other people can't pay for this. And how much will it increase by next year? And then we also have, you know, emerging technology. We have new drugs coming out.
New products, for example, coming in, something called the biologics, which are expected to cost a lot more. They're already expensive. I think these are the things that the government will have to look at and ensure that this will not burden the consumer when the TPP comes in. The number one concern, I think, is on the issue of the drug patent.
What made the headlines was biologics, of course, and the extensions of data exclusivity for those biologics. It makes a difference because it means that the ordinary Malaysian will not be able to access the generic the day after it expires. So it's a little bit technical, but the Malaysian version of data exclusivity was far better. It wasn't applied to all products as well, whereas now it's going to be a stricter situation where you wouldn't be able to access the generics as quick as under the Malaysian law. when a drug is created, there's a lot of information on it that is that could be made available to a generic company. So that could go from the formulations, the molecular composition, data on whether it's heat stable, details about chemicals it contraindicates, you know, all that sort of information that is made available to generic companies towards the end of the patent term. So this enables the generic company to make the medication. So when there's an extension of 5 years, that data can't go to the generic company, so the generic company wouldn't be able to make it. Or even if the generic company were able to make it, they wouldn't be able to register it. So it's complicated, but basically it means that the generic company wouldn't be able to create the medicines for the Malaysian market or market the medicines for the Malaysian market.
There's economists in the 1950s that basically concluded, given the state of knowledge we have about how it works, if we didn't have a patent system, we'd be foolish to adopt one. Given that we have a patent system, we'd be foolish to get rid of it. And unfortunately, our knowledge of the patent system isn't terribly advanced in terms of our empirical knowledge of where it works and when it works since the 1950s. A patent is a right that the government, depending on the country you're in, grants to people who invent new products. So in the case of healthcare, generally pharmaceutical products, various medical technologies, everything from a mechanical bed to various injection-type products, etc. You, as the inventor, will be able to sell your product at a higher price because you don't face competition in order to recoup the cost of your investment to develop that product and to make a little profit. There's an agreement called trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights, or to keep it short, TRIPS, that specifies that countries that are members of the WTO, which includes, you know, the vast majority of countries in the world, have to offer at least 20 years.
If we allow protection patent to be extended, then the opportunity to produce generics will be delayed. And that will, of course, incur costs. The good thing is that we get access to very good drugs, probably the latest drug, probably more efficacious drugs. But, of course, downside, the cost is going
to
be high.
You know, when I talk to people, they're just like, oh, but we'll miss out. And I'm like, miss out on what? Expensive medicines. It seems like the language is all around this big boys club. Miss out on this big boys club.
On these issues that are coming up, like patent protection, data exclusivity, evergreening of patents, and carving out of tobacco, they all coincide with what the Medical Association wants. But our fear is that because there are so many chapters in the TPPA, there may be things that the government wants to preserve and may be willing to sacrifice some things that relate to healthcare.
The sovereignty element comes from a government being able to be sued by a corporation if anything in the agreement is breached, if the corporation's profits are expropriated. You know, we could try to protect public health, but if your measure to protect public health reduces the profits of a company, be prepared to be sued.
Obviously, MMA is doing a great job trying to negotiate and protect the patient and protect their members. And I really think one thing that we need to have priority is that we need to protect the health of the nation, and then with the minimum cost that is incurred on them. Because at the end of the day, the cost eventually has to go somewhere, and then the patients will suffer. When the cost of healthcare is always discussed, there's always that two sides of the coins, right? You know, obviously the rising cost of technology, drugs, litigation, GST and things like that. But there need to be a compromise, wouldn't it? Because at the end of the day, we all like to protect the health of a nation. On the other hand, how do we do that with the limited resources?
Nobel laureate Joseph Stiglitz, says, the economist, he suggested that when there is patent issue, when a company or big pharma is produce a patented drug, why don't the government, for example, buy over that patent? And then with that, so for this, the government, if the government can do this, of course the cost is going to be quite high, but if there is a pool of many countries purchasing this patent and then manufacturing the product, that is a possibility. So I think there are ways to look at this. so that that burden is really more distributed rather than focusing only on the patients.
And when you restructure healthcare, I think one principle is that you cannot go backwards. I don't think any of us wants a system where our children have worse healthcare than we do.
With all that said and done about the rising cost of medicine, what does this all mean for the future? Let us know what you think, tell us how we can improve, and what you would like to hear for 2016. We welcome your feedback on Bigger Picture at bfm.my. I'm Mira Sivisodi. You've been listening to Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.